Community and Regional Affairs will now come to order. Let the record reflect that it's, you say, 8:08?
Daytime.
8:08, committee time. In attendance are Co-Chair Thomas, Representative Ledoux, Representative Salmon, and Representative Newman. First order of business today will be SB 142, and I believe Jane Alberts is going to be doing that one. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Jane Alberts. I work for Senator Bundy and the Labor and Commerce Committee. Senator Bundy is unable to be here, so my plan is to basically intro SB 142 and then hand off any questions that I can answer to the folks from DOT that are with me today. So with that, I will start with SB 142. Currently, there are two statutes regarding ownership of land for state airports. The first statute requires that the DOT conforms to federal requirements if the state wishes to receive FAA federal funding. The other statute gives regional school boards the opportunity to receive title to land and use in relation to regional educational attendance area schools. So these two statutes conflict, and the purpose of SB 142 is to clarify with the change in statutes so that this does not cause problems in the future. While the Alaska legislature clearly intended to allow regional school boards the option of greater control of their facilities through acquisition of title, there is no record that the legislature intended to do so at the cost of federal liability and federal funds, significant loss of federal funding, or a degraded state airport system. Several regional schools are located on state airport properties, some close to active runways and airport infrastructure. At various times, these regional school boards have requested that DOT convey full title to airport lands. This has caused some confusion, and both the Department of Education and DOT, as well as attorneys, have been involved in defending DOT's title to its airport property. This bill will clarify the intent of the conveyance language to exclude airport properties from that statute. This will not require any schools to move off their airport lands. This bill will just not allow the schools to gain title to the land in the future, so that there will be less conflict and nobody going to court to defend those titles. And I think that's the basics of the bill.
Ms. Ledoux.
Why would a school want to own an airport?
They don't want an airport. They sometimes would like to use some of the property, because some of the smaller places, they're limited on where they can build or have school facilities. So it's not about gaining access to the airport. It's just gaining access to title of some land, and that's where the conflict is.
So, you mean land near the airport?
Yes, and if the airport needs extra land, and DOT is behind me, and they can clarify this if I'm wrong, but if they need extra land or there's some areas in conflict, this will give them, DOT, the right to say, you know, we cannot let you have title to that land because we need it in order to say to FAA that we have the title, because that's one of the main criterias, is that they have the title and to gain the funding for the state airports.
But the school could, under those circumstances where there is a conflict there, and the school needs the property too, could the airport lease the property to the schools until they actually need it for the runway or whatever?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, I am thinking that Possibly not, but I think that that is a question for the DOT folks. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Kip Knutson with the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities.
Sorry.
I forgot the ring. Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, there are roughly 10 schools that are currently leasing land from the Department of Transportation on airport property. When we certify to the FAA that we have clear title to our airport, to the property within the boundaries of our airport, that's the rub, is that some school districts are located within those boundaries, and under the existing state statute, they have the right currently to seek that title, and of course that would jeopardize our assurances that we've made to the FAA that we would retain title. So we have several schools that are leasing land from DOT currently.
And would they be able to still lease the land from DOT?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, yes.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Kip, you said that they'd still continue to lease the land or the ability to do that. Is that until any expansion went forward, or is that until at what time is there plans in place, I guess, on these airports that they would expand and at that time that they would lose the control to lease those lands? Or could you explain the definition of how that's going to work?
Through the chair, Representative Newman, if a school district is going to expand or build a new school, we would work with the Department of Education and the school district to try to find them land elsewhere, because obviously the preference would be not to have schools on airports. But obviously school money is scarce, and that happens seldomly. So usually when an expansion occurs, as long as the expansion is moving away from the runway, we will generally continue to lease land to them. But if there's a complete rebuild, we generally try to find land off the airport, help them find land off the airport.
Representative
Newman. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Kip, in a letter from Commissioner Barton, it states that the YK at the Bettles Airport, Lakeland Peninsula, or Lake and Penn, and the Aleutian Regional School District all seem to have problems with this. What problems in particular are we talking about? What's going on out there to get a better understanding of why we're doing this?
Through the chair, Representative Newman, I guess I wouldn't clarify it or cast it as a problem. It just becomes a bureaucratic problem for DOT, in that the school district, per state statute, has the right to request from a state agency title to land. So they come to DOT and say, hey, we have this a school on your airport land, we want the title to it. So then the DOT has to go, sorry, we've just made assurances to the FAA that we will retain title to all the land within the airport boundary, so we're in conflict with these two programs, and so we have to hire lawyers to try to say, well, that's what the law says, but we really can't do that. And in three or four instances, we've spent probably a couple years of staff time trying to come to a reasonable conclusion to the conflict.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple of quick questions. My first question is, why were these schools built on airport land, and whose land is this? Is this the state's or the federal's land? The second one, I see that the CS has amended the original bill so that it doesn't include the buildings and structures and such, but just the land. Is that just the land surrounding the buildings, or how does that work?
Through the chair, Representative Newman, yeah, the original version had language in there that we weren't really interested in. I think our lawyers were just trying to get us the best deal possible, but all we're talking about here is land title. The DOT in no way, shape, or form wants buildings or anything else. They don't want title to any of that. That's the school districts to have and to own. We just have to retain title to the land. To your first question, which was, why are they on the airports? In a lot of cases, just history. For example, in Antioch, they have the school was located in the old White Alice buildings, which happened to be close to the airport. And then as time has gone on, the FAA's requirements for land for airports has increased because of safety margins. So oftentimes the boundaries have expanded. Where a school used to be far away from a runway for the standards of the day, now it's quite close or too close or whatever it might be. So it's more history than anything else. And in some villages, airport land is really some of the only best, the only good land in the village. So it's just out of necessity in some cases.
Representative Ledoux.
I see in either it's the sponsor statement or maybe it's in the memorandum, and this is referring to federal funding for airport projects and REAs. But this also applies actually to regular school districts too, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. Through the chair, Representative, yes, it does.
Any other questions? We've got Pam Lewis online from DOT. Ms. Lewis, is there anything you'd like to add?
Yes.
Go ahead.
This is Pam Lewis from DOT. I'm sorry. Was there a question for me that I could address for you?
Oh, no. I asked if there was anything that you cared to add to what's been presented already.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, there is not. Thank you. I think Mr. Knudsen has done a good job of explaining just this bureaucratic entanglement we'd like to try and fix.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anybody in the audience that wishes to testify? No. I guess we'll close it to public testimony committee.
I had just one more question,
Representative Newman.
Mr. Chair. Thank you. Kip or Pam or whoever, do you feel in any way that this could affect the ability of schools to continue the way they are, or to, if they need refurbishing or expansion in any way? Do you see any interference in how schools can operate with this bill?
Through the chair, Representative Newman, I don't anticipate any troubles with the future plans for schools because it's two state agencies working to achieve two fairly high goals, education and transportation. I think we'll always figure it out somehow. And there are no current conflicts underway. This has just been a historical problem, and we're just trying to make sure that we don't have to hire lawyers to figure out the conflict in the statute. So, no, we don't foresee it in, hindering a district's plans to educate their children.
Representative Salmon.
I have a question. A lot of the small villages doesn't have access to the public lands. There's a couple places like in Beaver, Chalkeetsik, where they're kind of pushed in the corner. You have any idea how we could solve this problem in the future?
Through the chair, Representative Salmon, I have, for example, in Beaver, which is an extremely constrained community, there are large portions of the community are already on airport land, but it's airport land that's not required for future airport needs. So we've actually gone to the Congress to ask them to remove the reverter clause. Basically, if we were given the land by the federal government, and if we were ever to give it away, it would have to go back to the federal government, in this case, some nature reserve, I think. So we've asked Congress to remove that reverter clause so that we could give the land to the community. So wherever that's possible, DOT is willing to do that. Where the land is so constrained that there is no other place for the school but on the airport, I'm sure that's the way it's going to be from now until far into the future. So it's not our intention to move communities because of the airport is conflicting. They have to coexist. Simple question.
Representative Ledoux.
Yeah, there's something I'm confused about with respect to how this impacts or doesn't impact schools that are not within REAAs, because I see we're amending AS 1408-151, which relates to REAAs, but I also see in this memo, it says REAAs where airport DOT needs may overlap, that it refers to one of the villages in my area, Eliamna, which I know isn't within an REAA. It's within the Lake and Peninsula school board, so I'm just sort of curious how that works.
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, I'm going to ask Pam Lewis. I believe the bill is speaking, the statute is addressing REAAs. We may have confused the issue by listing schools that were in established school districts, but if I could have Pam clarify.
Excuse me. Thank you. This is Pam, and I'm sorry for not catching all of the communication. The muting message keeps crossing what you're saying. Were you asking about Iliamna?
Pam, the question is specifically, this bill is addressing REAAs only. The statute that we're amending is REAA language. Is that correct?
That is correct.
So not organized school districts?
No.
So organized school districts currently in statute don't have the right to request title from state agencies, I guess is the bottom line.
And that is my understanding, yes.
Thank you.
Representative Salmon?
Several years ago, there was a lagoon problem in Chalkeetsik. In Chalkeetsik, school was built on the hill next to the airport years ago before the DOT got a little greedy. And they expanded their airport in kind of right down the middle of the school district. And in doing so, they put the lagoon in the DOT property, you know, well, DOT kind of took over, you know, so we had a problem with the lagoon leaking all the time. It runs down right down along the airport, you know, and it was kind of, we thought it was kind of a safety hazard, and we asked the DOT to look into the problem. They said that's the school's problem, you know. Then you ask the school district to look into the problem. They said that's on DOT land. So, I mean, with this kind of legislation, kind of cure the problem of who's who?
Through the chair, Representative Salmon, no, I'm afraid this probably won't clarify some of those disputes about who's responsible for what, but this bill is just trying to clarify that the DOT has to retain title to airport boundary lands. I can't answer you on Chalkeetsik right now, but if I can get back to you with a more coherent answer, I'd be pleased to do that. I'm not familiar with any conflicts in Chalkeetsik right now, so if I can do some research and get back to you.
That'll be great.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. I think we'll open it up to committee discussion. What's the will of the committee?
Mr. Chair, if we could, I'd like to take a little closer look at this and study just the effects on how these affect the way the abilities that these schools can operate in the future, and talk to some of the school boards out there that they're the schools that are directly affected by this, I guess. I think I'd be very interested to hear what they have to say about this, just so we can look at both sides of the story. Maybe we can get a report back from them.
Think you can have it back by Tuesday?
We can contact them today and see what we can do.
Okay, we'll hold it over.
I just think it'd be good to look at both sides of the story. I mean, we can do whatever the chair feels is right.
We'll hold it over till Tuesday. So I guess we're having a Tuesday meeting. Thank you very much.
Representative Olson, I just wanted to add that I think it should go on record that Eddie Jeans has contacted all the school districts that could possibly in conflict, and at this point, none of them had any negative concerns over the bill.
Maybe you could get us that information.
Okay. Great.
Thank you, Ms. Alberts.
Thanks.
Or if he brings it in before we adjourn.
Pardon me?
Or if he brings it in before we adjourn, if Eddie's in the building.
Thank you.
Should be up in finance.
Next bill will be House Bill 189.
Move morning. CS first.
I'll entertain that.
Okay, move CS 189, 24 LS 0703 / version G.
Any opposition? So moved. The working draft.
Pretty simple.
Good morning.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Louis Flora. I'm the House State Affairs Committee aide for Representative Paul Seaton. What we're looking at today is the CS for the House State Affairs bill extending the coastal management program. I'm just going to...
In front of you, Gabrielle.
Oh.
Just going to give a quick read through the some points here, and we like to put on the record that we just got a copy of this CS this morning. House State Affairs does have some concerns with it, but we can live with it. The Alaska Coastal Management Program is a partnership between federal, state, and local governments, providing state and local governments a voice in federal decision-making. Alaska is one of 34 coastal and Great Lakes states and territories that utilize the program, a program that annually channels millions of dollars in federal grant monies to the states. The ACMP has helped guide coastal development in the state since it was enacted in 1977. Without the program, the state and local governments lose their ability to control development on federal land and the outer continental shelf. In addition, the state will lose millions in federal coastal management planning monies. In 2003, House Bill 191 substantially revised the state coastal program. The Federal Office of Ocean and Coastal Resource Management, OCRM, must approve the revised program. OCRM has determined that additional revisions are necessary before they can grant approval. This is changing daily as we speak. This the 2003 legislation included state-imposed deadlines for revisions to local coastal programs. Coastal districts are attempting to follow the statutory directive to revise their programs to meet the new requirements. However, OCRM has identified had identified problems with the state's guidance to local districts regarding the scope and content of their program. The state will have to revise regulatory guidelines for the local districts before the new program can be approved by OCRM. In turn, the local districts will have to revise their programs to meet the new guidelines. It is a waste of time, money, and effort for the districts to revise their plans before the state's program is federally approved and any changes necessary have been made. And this is the current bill, I believe, extends the program termination that's written into House Bill 191 in 2003, and did not provide a copy of that bill for the committee, but it could be provided if you'd like it.
Are there any questions for Mr. Flora?
Just
Representative Newman.
Quick one. Thank you, Mr. Chair. You'd stated that State Affairs has some problems with this. What problems did they have?
The main concern was that we wanted districts to have enough time to compose their plans, and with the changing guidelines from between the state, between the negotiations between the state and the federal government on what the coastal management program would look like, there was a shifting target throughout this winter, and so there was a plan revision mandated in 2003 by House Bill 191, but what they were allowed to write their plans about, the guidance kept changing, and so the House State Affairs bill solidified that there would be 1 year following the OCRM, or the federal approval of the state program, and the current CS, as it's written, does not specifically stipulate that the federal program approves this, that the feds approve the state program. So I believe the concern is that it isn't solidified, I guess, if that makes sense. We wanted the districts to be able to have some things to work off of, an agreement, a solid agreement to work off of.
Okay.
I think I can help you a bit, Representative Newman. There's three more committees that this bill has to pass through. The sponsor was out of town for several days for a family emergency, and it's our intent to get the bill out of our committee. I believe DNR is probably going to have some more additional input, and possibly the administration and the sponsor of the bill, and I think it's going to be worked out in State Affairs.
Okay.
assuming we get it out of here.
Would the chair like me to make a motion to move this bill?
Well, I think we've got some public testimony coming in. But you have a question for?
Well, no, I thought that the federal and state came to an agreement. That's why we're listening and hearing this and moving along for 6 months. So maybe the sponsor may want to get briefed. But we're the 6 months is coming from the communities. I think they'll all be testifying, and that's why it's 6 months. And
correct. And I think DNR, if there's a representative from DNR here that could possibly describe the status of the negotiations between the I'm not exactly clear if they've come to an agreement yet.
Well, we were briefed by the third floor they had. So
okay, we haven't.
If things have changed, then, you know.
And I believe we've got somebody from DNR in the back. Thank you very much, Louie.
Good morning. My name is Bill Jeffress. I'm the director of DNR's Office of Project Management and Permitting, of which the Alaska Coastal Program is part of that office. Just to give you a brief update on where we are, the briefing that the governor's office gave was accurate. We have been in negotiations with OCRM since September, specifically on the amendments to the coastal program. We have, through excruciatingly long negotiations, come to an agreement with the federal government on how to get preliminary approval of the amendment. This will then trigger a NEPA analysis of the changes, and we have a clear path on how to get the coastal program approved and continue on with our relationship with OCRM and coastal management. What the governor offered and what DNR is working towards is granting, working with the legislature to extend the submittal date that the coastal districts have, realizing that there's a lot of specific issues that still need to be communicated to the districts, and at this time we've been more involved with the negotiations rather than direct communication on some of these issues with the districts. So the administration does support a six-month extension of the submittal date for the districts, and we also critically need what is offered in this committee substitute today to extend the state standards for another 6 months. This is really critical to keep the coastal program going. Without this extension, we lose our ability to continue doing federal consistency, which is about 85% of the consistency reviews that the coastal program performs. And unless these standards are extended, there's a chance that we lose our staff. So even if the program is approved by the end of this year, we wouldn't have staff to implement the program. So this is what's critical about this particular phase. The other point that the administration and the governor has us committed to is the extension or the sunset date for the existing coastal plants, and that would be 18 months from the enactment of the revised regulations, which was July 1 of 2004 of last year. So that would extend the sunset date for the existing district plans, extend the period where the coastal districts can submit their revised plans to come into compliance with 191. So hopefully, if this passes out, we can get those additional extensions put onto the bill and move through the legislature.
Any questions for Mr. Jeffers? Thank you very much.
Okay.
I think we'll go to North Slope Borough right now. Tom Lohman, are you online?
Yes, I am, Mr. Chairman.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you very much for the opportunity to testify. Again, my name is Tom Lohman. I represent the North Slope Borough, one of 27 active local coastal districts. We, of course, strongly support the extension and appreciate that finally the administration at this late date supports one as well. We've been asking the administration as the districts for an extension or to support one now for about a year and a half. The extension is necessary for all of us districts to properly address the need to substantially revise our district plans. As we have testified before, most of our plans took 3 to 4 years to develop initially, and the requirement now is for a complete overhaul of our local plans. There had been some assertion that districts had been dragging their feet and not working diligently to revise our plan since HB 191 was passed in May of 2003. That is demonstrably untrue. All legislators should have received a letter from the Alaska Coastal District Association explaining why the 27 active coastal districts could not confidently move forward with revisions until earlier this year, 2005. Let's be really clear about that. There is still great uncertainty among the districts regarding what we can address in crafting local policies under our revised plans, and not on insignificant questions, but for the North Slope Borough, for instance, on questions as significant as policies on subsistence and policies regarding activities on federal lands and the federal OCS, federal waters off the North Slope, which are critical to subsistence. We do know that at the end of the process, at the end of this plan revision, we will have less power, less authority, and less control over local development than we have under the existing plan. We need time to work with the more than 200 coastal communities represented by the 27 coastal districts to explain what is happening to their plans. These are your constituents, and they are going to be greatly upset that the plans that they know well and have valued for so many years are being gutted. A lot of folks in the community has worked very hard to get their local plans in place over the years. A lot of blood, sweat, and tears went into doing this because this is a significant and valuable tool in shaping development. Again, there have been some allegations that districts had been running amok and stopping valuable development in local communities. Again, that is demonstrably untrue, and we've not yet seen examples put forward by anybody that would substantiate that. As you can well imagine, local communities want and need development. They just want it to occur on their own terms. It's also the case that four of the DNR staffers who do plan reviews and work with the districts and have been working with the districts for years in some cases, three of them have announced that they are leaving the agency. Two of them, I believe, next month in May, and one of them at the end of the summer. We don't see any way that DNR could effectively review 27 coastal district plans if they are required to be submitted by the July 1 date of this year and work as effectively as DNR has said that the agency will on continuing to revise and modify these plans after the submittals without the extension. Finally, none of us like in the districts where the administration has taken this program that is so valued in so many communities. We believe it's simply bad public policy and that the legislature was really sold a bill of goods back in 03 regarding what kind of a meaningful role the districts would have at the end of the day. There are some rumors floating around that in later committees there will be an attempt to put a sunset date in on the program, to sunset the program in 09 or 011 or somewhere down the line, in some ways, I guess, to kind of keep a handle on the districts. We think that is wholly unnecessary and that the districts, are, as the voice of 200 communities and the residents that reside in those communities, are the best voice for controlling development within their areas and have been doing a very good job. That the legislation in 03 was a solution in search of a problem. And we believe the program is valuable and anything that can be done to replace local control to some meaningful extent would be much appreciated by the communities and by your constituents. Finally, I guess we do at least need more time to explain the new program to your constituents, to the local communities and local residents, and make these local plans as good as they can be. And we simply cannot accomplish that if the deadlines stay as they are now. And with that, I'll close and thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. DeLoman. Are there any questions for Mr. DeLoman? I think we'll go on to John Oscar.
Yes, this is John Oscar. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm a program director for Snowy Lake Coastal Resource Service Area District located in McCory. We serve 38 villages, which has the largest number of remote communities in the state. Our program is very essential to communities in these remote places to participate in the decision-making process and the only avenue that addresses local concerns and one that is held close to the hearts of many of the leaders out here because it addresses subsistence as our primary goals and objectives in our guidance and enforceable policies. One, for example, I just came back from Tuluksac. There's an application for a mining in the headwaters, and the village itself was very concerned, and they didn't have any idea what to do. They didn't know who to talk to, and I told them, hey, we're available for you. We provided this information to you. They did not know the information was available until I presented this application that was submitted for mining. And we were successful in bringing the stakeholders, which is the mining company that's going to be operating, and along with the landowner, the Chilista Corporation, and the village itself together, and discuss their concerns and make reports and pooling all this information together from different sources and agencies on studies that were done on the river itself. And this information was quite an eye-opener for the village itself. And this is a program like this is very essential for communities like this. And also, we're also in the process of working with other communities in the Kuskokwim drainage itself to address other areas that will essentially help the program to excel in the understanding of concerns with the decision-making process. We have not dragged our feet. The Alaska Coastal District Association sent a letter back in April identifying the reasons why the districts were prevented from having solid guidance. The districts finally saw a draft of the proposed regulations this February, back February 11 to 13, 2004, during our conferences. And I would address to this legislature that it's very essential that we have an extension. In my case, it would be unfair and a demanding pressure on our part to be able to bring together a solid, well-thought plan that would be reviewed by the Department of Natural Resources. And because we did not have a solid guidance, it was like going out there with some required changes and proposed changes that we're presenting to the villages that were a lie. Maybe we'll have this, maybe we'll have that, but we'll work on this and see what happens. But we did not have any solid guidance until February. We support, rather than a six-month extension, a one-year extension would be practical in our case. And maybe it would be a good idea to consider our case as one of those districts that would require a little more time. And to be fair with the other districts, I would like to see a one-year extension on this, and I do support the extension, and I concur with Tom Lohman's statements. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Oscar. Are there any questions for Mr. Oscar? I think we'll go on to Andrew DeValpine.
Hi, this is Andrew DeValpine. I'm the director of the Bristol Bay Coastal Resource Service Area, not to be confused with the Bristol Bay Borough. We're here in Dillingham. Our Coastal Resource Service Area is just one of our watersheds is the size of Vermont, to give you an idea of the area we cover, but our whole area is actually probably twice that size. I just wanted to weigh in supporting the six-month extension, and primarily so that we can get more participation from the villages. We have 10 in our region, and with the vagaries of weather, salmon fishing coming up, herring even more imminently, getting any meaningful participation before the current imposed deadline is virtually out of the question. I mean, we've sent our plans out for public comment. They're in the villages. They're public notice there. hopefully the word's getting around, but it's really no substitute for our getting out there and holding public hearings and being able to answer questions. So in closing, I just want to reiterate that we support this extension, and thank you for your consideration of this topic.
Well, thank you for calling in. Are there any questions for Andrew? Last one is Noel Woods, Matsu.
So I'm Noel Woods, representing myself in the Matanuska Valley Sportsman on this coastal zone management plan. The our area, the Matsu Borough, has been working on this for quite some time, and we find an interesting development as we go ahead, that the local administration is using or claiming that the existing coastal management plan allows them to regulate the waters reserved for public use within the state, closing them to different boating activities, times of use, et cetera, et cetera. And we have had no definitive explanation for this, nor a judgment. And this is something that I assume will take some time to resolve. I certainly would appreciate the time extension on this. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Woods. I think we have a question for you from Representative Newman.
Yeah, no, Representative Newman, first I'd like to say thank you to you for your support and what you do up in the valley there. I'd like to tell this committee that I trust Noel's judgment quite a bit on this, and just like to again say thanks, Noel.
Well, thank you, Mark. I think you're doing a good job down there. Keep it up.
Any other questions? Anybody in the audience that would like to weigh in on this? Well, I guess we'll close it to testimony and open it up to the committee. What are the wishes of the committee? Representative Ledoux?
I move CS for House Bill 189, CRA 24, LSO 703/D with attached fiscal notes and individual recommendations.
Any opposition? Passes on to State Affairs. I think we're going to go back to, I believe we've got somebody here who would like to weigh in on one of the previous bills. So let's open up Senate Bill 142 again briefly. Mr. Jeans.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Eddie Jeans, Director of School Finance for the Department of Education. I was listening into your discussion earlier, so I understand what the questions are. Mr. Chairman, this piece of legislation only applies to REAA school districts, and currently we have approximately 7 schools that are on airport lands. They've been built there over the years, and it's my understanding that this legislation is not intended to kick those schools off those lands. It's simply, when we build a new school in a community, typically what happens is the old school is the district will ask for transfer of that old school so that they can transfer it over to the community for community use. They would not be able to do that under this provision of law. We could continue to transfer the building, but we could not transfer the lands that the buildings sit on. So if the community wanted to use that building, they would have to move it off the airport lands. And I think that answers the questions that you were asking earlier.
I think Representative Newman had several questions, one of which is, had all of the 10 sites been contacted?
Mr. Chairman, I have not contacted all the 10 sites. But as I mentioned earlier, this is not an attempt to move them off that land. It will not affect their operations on an ongoing basis. It's just in the future, when we build a new school in those communities, we would not be transferring the building and lands at their request.
Representative Newman, I've got a feeling you have a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Eddie, I would just, I think maybe the future towards education might go to some more regional learning centers and stuff like this. We can try and focus our efforts towards there, building the new schools out in the bush. Maybe, I think a lot of times it's probably best to build them next to the original site or something because they already have that land there. And I just was wondering how this affects those. And again, Mr. Chair, if we could just wait, talk to those folks, I'd like to see both sides of that.
Representative Salmon?
I have a question for Eddie Jean here. Of those 7 or 10 sites, is Chalkeetsuk included in one of those?
Through the chair, Representative Salmon, it is.
Thank you.
Representative Newman.
And Mr. Chair, I would, as I stated earlier, I would, my staff can prepare a report to this committee on what those other districts feel and how they feel about this, so we can hear both sides. We'd be glad to prepare that.
I think we could have it by Tuesday.
Yes, sir.
Perfect. Mr. James.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to respond to Representative Newman. I understand wanting the time to talk to the school districts, but it's been my experience that in these cases, when we're dealing with the construction of a new school, it typically isn't on the airport lands. It's someplace else. And the issue that you will hear about, and I'll tell the committee, you will hear about it, is the transfer of the surplus building to the community. You know, some communities are very adamant that they want those old buildings for other community use, but they're sitting on airport lands and they're no longer being used for school purposes. And so that will be the issue you will hear about. But it's not affecting the educational program within those communities. That's dealt with differently.
Representative Newman?
Eddie, I do realize, too, I know I have talked to some of the schools out in rural Alaska that do have some of these buildings that are federal buildings. In Galena, you know, they had the old Air Force base out there. And the Air Force isn't using some of these buildings anymore, and the town wants to try and acquire these so that they can make them into an activity center for the kids and do things like this for these to help provide for more of the needs of the city. There's the building, it's in good shape, but the Air Force isn't using it anymore. Why tear this building down and remove it or something? But I don't know what lands there, and I'd just like to talk to them. If that works for this committee.
Any other questions for Mr. Jeans? Well, thank you again.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We'll hold it over till Tuesday.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
HCR 12. Representative Salmon, are you going to be doing this? Nope.
Keith. Oh, we have Moira going to speak on that.
Okay, we'll pull up two chairs.
For the record, my name is Casey Schroeder. I'm a legislative aide for Representative Thomas. I'm also one of the committee aides for the House Community and Regional Affairs Committee. And I'll be presenting the resolution, and maybe Moira later can answer some questions. We've all heard about the state of our communities all over Alaska. Communities are becoming unable to provide services for their residents, or they're shutting down completely. And while revenue in these communities is on the decline, the cost of living in these communities is skyrocketing. We've all heard about how the prices of fuel are outrageous in our rural areas. And also, a lot of these communities are unable to afford insurance, and this automatically makes them ineligible for a lot of state and federal funding. And the legislature is the appropriate body to develop a working policy on the sustainability of Alaskan communities. So HCR 12 provides that the Alaska Legislature, the First Alaskans Institute, and the Alaska Municipal League will work together to develop a task force that will consist of 3 senators, 3 representatives, a public member, a designee from the First Alaskans Institute, and a designee from the Alaska Municipal League, to work on and address the issues that our rural communities are facing. The project will consist of two steps. And the first step is a community audit and needs assessment. And several communities all over the state will be strategically selected and studied in depth. And some of the factors that will be used in selecting these communities is population, location, whether or not they're incorporated, and whether or not they're receiving federal funds, and if they are, how much they're receiving. Then a report will be generated from the first step. And in the second step, the task force will use this report, the Denali Commission's five-year plan, and the Rural Energy Action Council's finding and action recommendations to develop legislative findings and draft legislation that will be proposed in the second session. And I'd also like to make it clear to the committee that this is not an attempt to sidestep legislation that's already been introduced that attempts to address the problems in the rural communities. We support that. It's very well intentioned, but most of the time it doesn't address the whole picture. So we would like the legislature to develop a working plan and be able to solve as many of these problems as possible. So with that, I can entertain any questions you might have. I believe you also have a CS.
Oh, yeah, we do have a CS. We'll have to move that.
Shall we adopt the CS?
Yeah, Mr. Chair. I think we should adopt, we'll move to adopt CS concurrent resolution number 12, version 24-LS0964/F.
Any opposition? It's our new document.
We have a We have a discussion.
Representative Newman.
I just I was looking for a copy of the CS. So we can pass it out.
Mr. Chair. Since there's no
Mr.
questions.
Thomas. Representative Thomas.
Maybe just discussion. I was thinking, I think I got four of these communities in my district that are suffering or just about defunct right now, and so that's why I'm interested in moving this thing along. Plus, I also feel it's the community regional affairs job to go out and see what's wrong with these communities, what can we do, how do we come back with recommendations to the legislature, and that's why this resolution is coming through, and that's why we made it a community CNR issue rather than individuals. We've had several of us talking about it, and I talked to Kurt and said I think it's more of a community issue. And Moira and through Salmon's office and other people have taken the initiative to talk to First Alaskans and AML to get them to back it. So I've got other people we're talking to help support it, but we have a $14,000 fiscal note which is going to throw this thing right into finance on the House side, and we get to the Senate side, may not even get out of this. So we do it one day at a time, as I call it, to get this thing through, because we're not done yet. But I think it's the least we can do to help. And, you know, anybody can pick up an article any day of the week and see our communities are in trouble. You know, I've got, like I said, I've got four that I know of, and the rest are borderline.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to just echo the tone of what Representative Thomas is saying, particularly that my concern is with the schools and where the schools are going in there, and we need to do something to address the needs of these schools, and I think a task force to look at these specific needs and how can we start making schools better in rural Alaska and bringing them up into the fold. You know, we have 47.3% of Alaska Natives are graduating from high school, and 67.2% of other races. We need to improve that. We need to make that better. How do we do that? There is no single answer, but let's have forming a group to do that. And I would certainly support this through there, and even go testify in front of these other committees to try and move this bill forward through this process.
Well, I think it's our intent to get it out today, if at all possible. I believe we've got Kathy Wasserman who would like to testify. Thanks, Casey.
For the record, my name is Kathy Wasserman with the Alaska Municipal League, and I'd sort of like to echo what Representative Thomas and Representative Newman said. one thing that we have all failed to do is look at the big picture. Even with schools, while we fund remodels of schools in some remote communities, we don't take into consideration the fact that that community can't provide water. And we need to look at the whole big picture, and we've failed to do that. We have bills that address new boroughs and new boundaries, and how is this third layer of government going to provide for the people? How is it going to support itself? We've got so many issues that revolve around this, and so we have, through our discussions with Moira and the Bush caucus, we have come to the conclusion that we need to look at the big picture, and the purse strings and the ability to do something lies within the legislature. And as Moira said, we would like to work with the legislature, not against them, to put something together that works and to get a plan.
Any questions for Ms. Wasserman?
Thank you.
Thanks, Kathy. Moira, you put a lot of time and effort into this. Do you care to go on the record?
No.
No? No. Well, I think we'll, anybody else in the audience that would like to weigh in? Well, let's go to the committee. What are the wishes of the committee?
I think it's a great idea. Therefore, I'll move CS for House Concurrent Resolution Number 12, Work Draft 24 LSO 964/F with attached fiscal note and individual recommendations.
Any opposition, Representative Salmon? You going to support this?
No record.
It's out of here.
We might note that it only has one committee referral in this one and goes to the floor. Maybe, unless they, no, we got a fiscal note, they might throw it into finance. But maybe we'll ask them to waive it.
We're adjourned. I know.